Diane Green.
Yes.
Diane is the owner of Green Tree Naturals, a small acreage that's a 31-year certified organic farm outside Sandpoint. Welcome, Diane.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
I just read your winter newsletter, and it looks like you're involved in a lot more things than farming. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, you know, winters are long, so you got to find something to do. I mean, I do crafting, but I've been working with the University of Idaho as a consultant and advisor since they developed their small farm program in 2007 and continue to work with that. So usually in the winter, I spend a fair amount of time teaching online and in-person classes in sustainable agriculture and a fair amount of organic gardening workshops too. And the last, I just finished a contract with University of Idaho Small Farmers Program. And last winter, teaching online webinars, I had 70 students online.
Wow.
from my kitchen table, which was really wonderful to not have to travel and be able to do that from home. And I'm also working as a consultant advisor for Oregon State University Small Farms Program. Started that last year and have one more year on a contract, but we're looking at expanding that to develop some more small farms programs there. So teaching for me is as much of a passion as farming and growing food is.
Great.
So if I'm not growing and farming, I'm teaching growing and farming. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. You have the greatest website, too, of all the organic growers. I mean, everything is on there. But today, we're going to talk about seed saving. So, Diane, tell us, why do we need to save seeds?
Well, there was a time where everyone saved their seeds. I mean, seeds were one of the most precious commodities that anyone would have traveling to the new country or traveling anywhere. They would bring their seeds so they could grow their gardens. But when it comes down to it, if you raise and save seed, you're producing seed for your garden. And by careful selection over generations of plants, you can produce plants best suited to your climate and your specific gardening conditions. And no one else can do that but you for your own garden. And flavor and pest and disease resistance, early bearing and size are among the many characteristics that can be enhanced by judicious selection over a period of years. And we, for us, saving seed is really an important part of being a sustainable small acreage farm. And I think it's a really important part for any home gardener as well to consider being more sustainable at what they're doing by saving seed that will adapt specifically to their microclimate, because there's a lot of variables here. And if you're saving seed, it's adapting to your specific area and it makes a difference.
Right. Microclimate being the key word there is your specific area.
Right. Right.
Right.
Like we started saving snow pea seed almost 20 years ago, right about the time things really started heating up with the change of climate. We started getting 90 degrees in May, which was really unusual, and that's usually when the peas are on. So we were saving our peas, and now we have a heat-tolerant snow pea, which we raise. And I guess I didn't mention, you're asking what I do in winter. In the summertime, we also grow seed for Snake River Seed Cooperative. And we've kind of shifted gears into being, we call it retirement farming. Ha ha ha. I mean, we still have a couple acres in production, but we've gone from 3 decades of selling wholesale and retail to just selling at our farm stand on the farm during the peak of the season one day a week and raising seed. And
raising seed.
And I know what day that is because I drive by on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, and it's always Thursday. So I've missed your farm stand most of the summer, Diane.
Well, it's very well attended a lot. And I was at the farmer's market for 28 years, and a lot of my customers followed me out there. So
Sure. That's a long history with those people.
I really like not having to come to town. Retirement farming means I'm only coming to town about once every 3 weeks.
You're letting the people come to you. It's nicer.
Yep.
Well, I was thinking on seed saving, and it's one of my biggest regrets that I didn't start when I first started gardening, because that's 25, 30 years of experience that I could have been using. The other thing I was thinking is seeds become endangered. They aren't always available, or they become a single seed variety that is not really good for pest and disease control. So maybe that's another reason to save seed, is to save those old, like you said, the old country seeds.
Right. I was reading and just kind of preparing for this and about endangered varieties, and I've read that we've lost over 93% of the variety in our food seeds over the past 80 years. Like in 1903, we had almost 500 varieties of lettuce. By 1983, we had 36. We've lost something like 80% of tomato varieties. And when it comes down to it, you know, big seed companies only want to produce certain seeds. And they're specifically looking at seeds that are bred for vegetables that are good for shipping, not for flavor, often grown as a monocrop for ease of easy harvest. And we can do something about that as individuals, saving our own seed. So
that's right. You know, the potato famine was because they grew one variety of potato in Ireland, and that's what wiped out, is that one variety. The other thing I was thinking is, geez, when the COVID hit, I was wondering if we would even have seeds available, if growers were growing, and that was kind of a worry, the supply chain problem.
Well, part of that supply chain problem was because everybody was kind of freaking out and buying seeds, and a lot of people that were buying seeds weren't even gardeners.
Oh, that's right.
So it did really shift and offer a perspective of how much we take for granted with our seed sources, and it's really important just for the sustainability aspect as gardeners and farmers that we do what we can to protect that seed source and save what we can. And there's plenty that we can do as individuals.
Right, and pass it along, too, saving it and giving it to friends, too.
Yeah. Hey, Diane, is this an issue with seeds, buying seeds versus saving seeds? Is disease ever transmitted through seeds that you buy, or are the producers pretty good at making sure that that doesn't happen?
I'm not sure I can answer that question absolutely. As far as disease in that holds into a seed genetically, biologically, I'm not sure about that. Certain traits certainly are there. I mean, there's a lot to be said for genetic memory that holds in the life of a seed.
Yeah. I was kind of going down the road of garlic, which, of course, isn't a seed, but we know that that terrible disease of garlic is something to be worrying about.
Right.
And, yeah, not a seed, though.
Boundary County has white rot, which has been a... and once it gets in the soil, it stays for a long time. I've been working with a few farmers planting mustard cover crop to try to bring that out of the soil. And it seems like it's kind of having some success with that, and we're hoping that we can continue coming up with some different ways to work on that. But once it's in the soil, I mean, we're really always concerned about that because we grow a lot of garlic. So
yes, I got it in my soil. I got a garlic clove from a friend up in Bonners and planted it, and sure enough, I got it the next year. So it is something to really, really think about, where your source comes from and whether it's been prepared or prepped in any way.
Right. But yeah. Garlic is, I mean, they call it garlic seed, but technically that's kind of not exactly right. What we're talking about.
Right. The bulb.
Right. That's sexual versus asexual propagation.
Okay. There you have it. There's the professor. The other thing is, if you buy seeds, it costs you money.
Well, yeah, it's pretty amazing. When I've been teaching a seed saving workshop as a part of our 7-week organic gardening workshop series during the summer. We just finished that a couple weeks ago. And one of the things that everybody's always surprised about when we go around looking at different types of seeds, for example, marigold. I mean, we've been saving our marigold seeds for years, and we have marigolds all over the garden because they're good for bringing in the beneficial insects and repelling some of the pests. And one marigold flower produces about 30 seeds. And when you buy marigolds in a package, you get about 30 seeds. So the amount of money that can be saved by saving your own is considerable. But I mean, there's a lot more reasons than money saving to save your own seeds.
For sure, for sure. So these are all the reasons of why we should save seeds. So next up is, let's talk about how to save seed, to get a safe seed source and a true seed.
Well, it's really important that you plan ahead for seed saving, number one. And with that, for example, I mean, at our farm, my husband and I mean, the only way we can manage a 2-acre growing area is we have specific things that we're responsible for. So Tom's really all about the tomatoes, and we grow 15 different varieties of tomatoes. Well, when it comes, and they're all, most of it is seed that we've been growing, although we do some hybrid varieties. But a part of that is flagging things and planning ahead enough that you flag it so it doesn't get harvested, because seed needs to be fully mature on the plant. You can't pick an unripe tomato and have the seed ripen in it, and you can't, if you're doing beans or peas or anything like that, you've got to plan ahead enough to have the foresight to flag it and save it, because what will happen is somebody will come through and go, oh, look at that nice ripe tomato, and if it's not flagged, it gets picked. So we, and a lot of things like beans, for example, and we save our own bean seed. You can't really be harvesting off of a row of beans and saving the seed. You've got to flag off one portion of that row for seed saving, because there's not enough time for the seed to mature if you don't let it go unharvested until it's dry pods on the plant.
I have a perfect example of that. I was trying to save my pea seeds this year, and Scott kept eating my saved one. So then I flagged it, and he thought, oh, I should pick this one. It's flagged. So our communication is not the best. But I also learned with peas, I had two varieties growing together, so I couldn't save those peas necessarily because they were right in the same bed.
Well, you could. We grow snow peas for the seed collective. And because I mentioned that earlier, we've been saving the snow pea seed for years. And we specifically selected, when we were saving that seed, we would harvest the last peas of the season, because we wanted peas that were going to be heat tolerant. So we also grow sugar snap peas. And one of the things that you need to be thinking about seed saving is really in the spring, thinking ahead enough to separate different varieties. And even though we have our snow peas and our sugar snap peas a couple hundred feet apart in the garden, they still will cross. And all that means is, when I save the snow pea seed and plant it out the next year, I might get a couple sugar snaps in there. Or in my sugar snaps, I might get a couple of snow peas, but that's no big deal.
So that's just the plant itself. It's not a whole different hybridized pea.
Right, right.
Oh,
They'll adapt, and you'll just get a mix.
Right.
But if you want the seed to breed true, which means it's going to be exactly what you started out with and what you want, you have to think about separating certain plants and certain varieties from each other so they don't cross-pollinate.
Right, right. And what about the difference between a hybrid and open-pollinated? Does that matter?
Oh, absolutely. So when you go to order your seeds or buy your seeds, if you're thinking about seed saving, you really need to be choosing open pollinated varieties. And in most seed catalogs, and I think most seed packets as well, will state on there that it usually will just say OP for open pollinated. And open pollinated varieties produce offspring that closely resemble the parent. For example, if a gardener grows an open pollinated bean variety of Kentucky Wonder and saves the seed, she'll find that she grows out the seed next season. Her Kentucky Wonder beans will look very much like what she grew last year. Open pollinated varieties result from the combination of parents that are genetically similar and share specific traits that distinguish the variety, where a hybrid seed is the result of controlled crossing of genetic distinct parents. So while you can save hybrid varieties, which is in a seed packet or in a catalog, it'll say F1. It might not, well, most likely it will not be what the parent looked like. They'll shift around. But like if you grow I can go on about that, but I think that's enough of that.
Yeah, that's a big part of it, that open pollinated, making sure it's not a hybrid seed, because then some kind of crazy monster comes up the next year.
Absolutely. And a lot of things as far as open pollinated, you really need to be, like I said, you need to be planning ahead. But that doesn't mean that if you didn't plan that you can't save seed. It's fun to see what you end up with. You know, if you've got bees cross-pollinating in your squash, you can come up with all kinds of bizarre-looking things the following year.
Right. Compost squash is always interesting.
Right.
So physically, how do you save seeds? You leave them on the plant for sure. It has to be completely mature before you pick them. And then what? I know sometimes the seed pods will open and throw the seeds everywhere, and then you lose them. So at what point do you pick them, and then what do you do?
Well, it really depends on the variety of seed. For beans and peas, for example, they need to be dry pods on the plant.
Okay.
And like I mentioned earlier, the seed has to mature on the plant. It's not going to mature after the fact. So like when we've been saving melon seed for many years and finally came up with a cantaloupe that does well, a nice dessert melon, and it's got to be totally ripe on the vine for those seeds to be viable. So really looking at if you're saving flowers, the flowers, different flowers have different things. So
Diane, melon ripe on the vine still has a very gooey middle. What happens then? What do you do with the seeds?
Well, that's when you know that it's mature enough to save that seed. So we'll take the seed out, spread it out on a paper towel, let it dry out. And some seed, like tomatoes, peppers, a number of different things, they call it decanting, which is putting it in water after you've taken it out of the plant, extracted it from the plant, and putting it in. We'll put it in a small jar of water, the seed in the water, shake it up and let it sit. And the seeds that are fully mature, with a fully mature endosperm, which is the stored food, which gives the seed the variety to the ability to germinate. The mature seeds are heavier and they'll fall to the bottom. The ones that are not mature will float on top. So decanting whatever seed it is, I mean, you don't have to do that with all seeds, just specific varieties. Most of the varieties that are juicy in the middle.
Right, longer plants, probably.
Right, right. But we grow a variety of sweet pepper for the seed co-op, and we always decant it, which is, as a home gardener, I wouldn't necessarily do that, but we will do that to assure that we're sending the seed co-op seed that is fully mature and has a higher viability rate.
Okay. Wow, that's a great trick. I wondered how you know that they were viable the next year, especially the longer, you know, more difficult seeds. Now, what about like the root crops? That is it the next year that they'll send up seed, or is that considered a biennial seed?
A biennial supposedly will make seed in the second year. However, a lot of varieties, think beets and chard, which are related, which are biennial and technically are going to make seed in the second year. But in the first year, when you plant them, oftentimes you'll find some plants that are going to seed. Those are not the ones that you would want to save.
Okay.
You need to know if it's a biennial. And really, as far as seed saving, know some basics of what the history of the plant is and be selective. Because if you collect seed from a biennial, which you're supposed to be collecting from the second year, and you collect it in the first year, you're picking up traits of a variety that's going to want to seed in the first year, which is not what you want.
Right. Wow, that's interesting. So they're kind of bolting that first year, really. They're not really making seed.
Right. Technically, if we were saving seed from something like that, we would cull it out and take it out of the seed stock. But like for beets, and we've grown beets for seed, we will dig up some beets at the end of the season and store them. We have a walk-in cooler, but you could store them in the back of the drawer of the refrigerator, rather than keep them in the ground because they might freeze, and then take them out in the spring and plant them. And one beet will make 1,000 seeds.
Wow.
So you don't, I mean, you look at what the plants will produce, and truly all plants, their vegetables especially, their point of life is to make seed and reproduce themselves. So.
Right, right.
It's up to us to provide a healthy environment for that to happen and be making clear observations about when that seed is ready to harvest.
Right. Well, that's so interesting. One of the other advantages I heard of saving seed that I had never considered was you let the plant go to flower and then go to seed, and the pollinators are, the pollination is improved because you're leaving food source for the pollinators. So I thought that was kind of interesting too.
Yeah, it's an exciting thing. I love watching that happen.
I have a question that I don't know if you can answer it or not for us, Diane, but as we know, there are organizations that try and save every seed for posterity. I think there's one in Sweden, and I don't know if there's one here in the US or not, but do those seeds ever come back and come into production? Is there any chance we'll ever get to use any of those guys that got stored away?
I don't really know the answer to that. I know that we have a seed bank in the Antarctic, and actually one of our, the gentleman that used to manage the university research station was involved with that, and still Dan Barney working with the seed. Mm-hmm. And the seed, now we have seed savers organizations, and a lot more possibilities. But I know they're doing that to protect those heirloom varieties, and as a seed bank. But I don't know the answer to that. If they come back out, I would think they would need to at some point.
Yeah, in order to make fresh ones so that they don't get so old, maybe.
Right.
Another question. You are this expert and long-term seed saver and planter of your own seeds. Do you try and create any new varieties, or do you stick with your tried and true? What is your goal when you're saving seeds?
Well, the goal is to produce as much as we can from our own seed that's adapted well to our growing environment. But there's a few things that I've been playing around with, like straw flowers. I do dried bouquets and use straw flowers on my garlic braids and things like that. And when I first started growing straw flowers, they were all orange, but here's a row of orange straw flowers, and there was one that was a lighter color. So I saved seed from that. And then the next year, I grew that. And the next year, I had more lighter colored ones and a couple of pink ones. And now I have a variety of white straw flowers, pink straw flowers, tangerine. So straw flowers are something that I've been saving for over 20 years, and I'm finding I might plant a whole row of pink and there'll still be one orange one in there. So saving seed with flowers, you never really know, because the bees are pollinating, and even if they're self-pollinating, they'll cross-pollinate with wind or whatever's going on. But it's an exciting thing to do. Makes me feel like a mad scientist out there.
It is all a science experiment, isn't it?
It is. And all we can do is nurture the plants and provide the best environment that we can and make clear observations for seed saving. And it's really important that you harvest from the healthiest plants if you want to keep your garden growing in a healthy, viable, vigorous way. So it's really about planning for the future.
Wow. I think that's our break right there. We're going to go to a song break real quick. We've been here in the studio with Diane Green and Seed Saving. So let's go on to John Prine and Summertime, and we'll be back with... Here we are back in the KRFY studio, and this morning we're on Garden Life and here with Diane Green. And we were just talking about, Diane, where would people go to learn a little bit more about seed saving?
Well, this fall, I believe the date is going to be November 3rd for our second annual food summit. I'll be teaching a workshop there on seed saving, and the library has some great resources of seed savers books, and really wintertime's a good time to be reading up and learning as much as you can. So,
and Diane, tell us the where and the when, or roughly, for your presentations on seed saving.
The food summit is put on by the University of Idaho. It'll be out at the Sandpoint Organic Center on North Boyer, and we're working out. I'm on the planning committee, so we have a lot of details to work out, but they had asked if I would do a seed saving workshop, and then we do seed saving workshops on the farm every summer, and I'm sure there's a fair amount of videos. I think through the Cultivating Success Program, which is the small farms program that I'm involved with through University of Idaho, cultivatingsuccess.org, you might be able to find some resources and videos on there.
A lot through the extensions, the university extensions all over the country about seed saving when I was researching.
Oh, right, right.
There's a lot of information.
There's plenty of resources there.
That's
you just
right.
need to educate yourself.
But these details that you're giving us, that's from years and years of experience.
Well, yeah. I suspect those other resources are people that know what they're doing, too.
Maybe. Hey, so let's just go to the end of the summer garden report. Just a quick 5 minutes. I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask you about how your garden went this summer. Like right now, like how's the harvest? Are we happy?
Well, we're harvesting a lot of everything right now. The summer squash and eggplant and pole beans and the bush beans are just about done. The pole beans are just about done. We're harvesting onions. The garlic's been hanging for a long time. We're still cleaning garlic, but there's still a lot of food out there. We're waiting for the winter squash. They really need to totally mature on the plant for winter storage. If you pick them too early, they won't store. So we need a frost for that to happen. We're eating sweet corn. Yay. Love that. I've got flagging all over the garden for saving seeds in my flowers, and I'm harvesting snow peas and sugar snap peas and some dry beans for seed, a few different seed varieties.
Diane, do you save seeds for just everything, for example, lettuce or maybe arugula, or are there just certain ones that you really prefer and enjoy saving seeds for?
I don't save seed for everything. I mean, I know a lot of people will let their lettuce go to seed and just let it go crazy and thin it out. But we specifically, a lot of the lettuces that we grow and things like broccoli, for example, we don't only grow open pollinated. I do some hybrid varieties of broccoli that are heat tolerant, which we started growing, and we grow some hybrid varieties of lettuce that are heat tolerant because the climate is changing. And the a hybrid isn't a negative thing because they do bring in their bred for certain traits like heat tolerance. So we've been harvesting broccoli since May. And we're still harvesting mass amounts of broccoli. Wow. And we grow like 9 different kinds of broccoli. Mm-hmm. We grow 9 different kinds of lettuce. And I think it's really important. We talked earlier about monocropping, not doing that. Diversity is one of the most important things you can do in the garden. So don't open yourself up to some variety.
Right, right. What do you do with the beds after you've pulled the plants out? What do you, with a fallow bed, what do you do?
Like as soon as the garlic gets pulled out, which is usually the third week of July, first thing we do is we plant a cover crop. And we use mustard as a cover crop because, I mean, we've experimented with a lot of different things. And sometimes we'll mix peas in with that because we'll have extra peas, pea seed that we've saved. But we like mustard because it germinates in hot, cold, wet, dry, and it grows fast and creates a fair amount of biomass, which is what we want for turning back into the soil, because it's the purpose of a cover crop. One is if you have a cover crop in there, you have something growing so there's no weeds, but the other part of it is you till it back into the soil or turn it into the soil for organic matter.
And I suppose you don't want your mustard going to seed. You till it in before it makes seeds.
We try to do that. I mean, we have parts of the garden that we planted mustard in that we took out of production this year and just planted the mustard, and we're planning on tilling it in. And then we have a fellow that brings beehives to the farm. We have 28 hives there, and the bees arrived just as we were getting ready to cut the mustard. Cut the mustard. Yeah, and so we left it because the honeybees, it was the most amount of flowers that we had at the time, so we left it for them. So it'll just seed back in, and we'll still use it as a cover crop.
What were your best crops of the year? I assume broccoli is one of them.
Broccoli's up there. The eggplants are really absolutely beautiful this year. Beans are always big. I don't know. A lot. Every year in the garden, there are successes and failures. That's a given. I mean, everybody's going to have successes and failures. I think this year for us, we found ourselves saying, that's never happened before, over and over again. And gardening keeps you humble. It keeps you real. We acknowledge that you can do everything right, and it's really not all up to you. You just give it your best shot and accept that some things are going to be successful and some things aren't, and celebrate those that are.
Mother Nature always rules.
That's right.
So, finally, what was your favorite moment in the garden this summer, late summer?
Favorite moment. I was weeding the leeks, which were right next to the garden fence, and a little Bambi was sleeping on the other side of the fence about 10 feet away. And I heard something rustling and looked over, and he was kind of peeking at me. He was laying there because, you know, the babies will lay down and wait for mom to come around. And he was so close to me, maybe a week old at the most, just watching. And I talked to him, and he kind of listened. And he's still around. He's much bigger, still has the spots, but that was pretty special. And I try to remind myself, because we're working on the farm, we're out there all the time, but I try to remind myself to just stop, take a deep breath, take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, and just observe, watch nature, watch the butterflies. Oh, we had swallowtails, caterpillars in our dill, and we have dill all over the garden this year, and we had more swallowtails, caterpillars, laying there, eggs and producing, and so that was pretty exciting.
That's great.
I mean, every day is a wonder out there. I mean,
it really is. I think that might be a perfect ending place. What a wonderful conversation, Diane. Thank you so much. We've had Diane Green. Why don't you take a minute and give us your webpage so people, if they want to go on and see what you're up to, they can do that.
It's greentreenaturals.com.
Simple.
And thank you for the opportunity to share.
Always. Love to have you on, Diane, and thank you so much for coming in. We've got another song that we're going to play. Julie has it up here. It's the Brothers Four, The Green Leaves of Summer. And we'll be right back.